Releasing Unconsciousness. In this podcast, Eckhart talks with a live audience, and he says, sometimes we experience a gravitational force that seems to push us back into unconsciousness. We may feel overwhelmed by watching the news or experience a painful loss. In those moments, we return to the practice of presence. That's the best thing we can do for ourselves. And Eckhart says there's a higher purpose at work, and awakening is deeper than our suffering.
Consciousness, the greatest mystery of the universe, and the essence of who you are, undoubtedly. So the reason why you are here, on one level, there's a personal reason why you have come here. On a deeper level, you're here because the universe wants to and is in the process of becoming more conscious. There is an arising of consciousness here. And there are, it seems, two factors at work. There is the impulse that pushes consciousness into this dimension, and there is something else that wants to hold it back. There is a gravitational force that sometimes makes it appear that the universe is designed to keep you from becoming conscious, is designed to sabotage your attempts of being conscious. That is the gravitational force, the unconsciousness, a certain heaviness. When you listen or watch the news, most of the things that are presented to you as the most important things that have happened on any given day are a reflection of the gravitational force. So it can be very misleading if you actually believe that the things that you watch and listen to through the media on a daily basis, that those are the most important things that are happening on the planet at the moment. Now, it's very, very easy to be seduced into believing that, because the entire culture seems to support that view. So when you listen to the news, when you watch the news or read about it, a lot of it, maybe not all of it, occasionally you get a few interesting things that almost get in there by mistake. Most of it is about the unconsciousness and the effects of unconsciousness in humanity. And a lot of it is about those humans who are the most unconscious. Unconscious, I believe, most of you probably know what I'm talking about. Most of you will know that I'm not referring to those humans when I describe them as unconscious, that they are actually that is not the meaning of unconscious in the way I'm using it, and it's not the meaning of unconscious when we use the term in a spiritual sense. So just for those few of you who may be relatively new to this or to this kind of language, the way we use unconscious here refers to complete identification with the stream of conditioned thinking that continuously goes through people's minds, plus the emotions that correspond to that stream of thinking. There is absolutely, in an unconscious person, there is zero awareness beyond the stream of thinking, which is determined by the way in which this person is being conditioned by the surrounding culture, both the collective culture a person grows up in and the personal influences. In other words, they believe in every thought that arises in their head. There's not a slightest space between them and the thought. There is, in an unconscious person, a complete lack of inner spaciousness. There is no awareness. There's only thinking. And Spiritual awakening, of course, is the awakening of awareness, which is a dimension of consciousness that is, we can use either one of two words, that is deeper than thinking, or we could use another word, which I perhaps tend to use more often. None of these words is absolutely correct. Higher than thinking. There is the possibility in every human for the arising of a dimension of consciousness that transcends thinking. Now, in many humans, that possibility is a latent one, it's dormant, it's a seed that has not sprouted whatsoever. But any human, no matter how unconscious, can, if certain things happen to this human being, there's the possibility that even the most unconscious human can suddenly, or through a series of experiences, which are mainly experiences of extreme suffering, can become conscious. Suddenly this little seed begins to sprout and there is suddenly a minimum of awareness arising. Now, for a very unconscious human, in other words, now we know what unconscious is, totally identified with the conditioned mind, so that you inhabit a conceptual reality mostly, and you judge whatever you perceive around you, every other human being, you judge them through the veil of your conceptual reality. So all you ever see is a completely distorted view of what things are like or what another human being is like. And you have a totally distorted view of yourself too. A conceptual sense of identity, only conceptual, meaning it consists of thought structures, thought forms. And so when that happens, for example, it's easy to condemn a large section of humanity for certain reasons which are conceptual, because, for example, they don't believe the same things that you believe. Therefore, they are less than human. Therefore, I need to kill them. That sounds crazy. Of course, it is insane. But it is the reality of many humans and has been for a long time. Now, a certain percentage of humanity are awakening out of that complete identification with conditioned thinking, and this is why you are here. You would not be here if the transcendent consciousness that is beyond thinking were not already arising in you. That has brought you here. And it sometimes happens that people book a place to come to a retreat or a conference or a talk, and a day before or on the day that they are supposed to come, the mind takes them over and says, what's the point? Why should you go to that retreat? Why did I book that? It just doesn't make sense. Why should I waste my time with that? And then they believe in the thoughts that arise, and the gravitational pull of the unobserved mind takes over, and then they stay home and don't come and are miserable there. And and the next day, the unobserved mind says, why didn't you go to that conference you had booked? You always do that. You never stick to anything. You're no good. And so you can be miserable that way, and you're still trapped in the conceptual world of only thought, no awareness of thought. And then in those humans, there's no stillness. The stillness is the space between two thoughts where awareness shines through, where awareness arises. And in many humans, that has not happened yet. In others, it happens sporadically. And there are many, including many of you who are here, you are going through the awakening process, which means sometimes you're awake and conscious, and sometimes you're not. And you know the difference when you get trapped in your thoughts and they are telling a whole story about life, about yourself, about other people, about what they did and didn't do and should have done, and what you should have done but didn't do, could have done and might still do but probably won't. And then you get trapped in there and you inhabit a world of misery. You create your own personal misery, and occasionally you have little moments when you say, oh, isn't that great? This great thing has just happened to me. And then you put this on Facebook, look, this has happened to me. Nowadays, you are not confined to your head for your conceptual reality. You put it out there. This mental construct, and you very carefully choose the things that you put out there, and it's a mental construct supported by pictures of yourself. Or look at me, this is where I am. It's a mental construct. And then those people who read it, they believe that that is your reality, and they feel bad. And then to make up for that, they create their own mental construct. And so the clever human mind has come up with countless inventions to avoid stillness, more now than ever, as it come up with things that constantly demand your attention and stimulate the identification with thinking, that greatly increase the clutter. Clutter is the word I use for useless thinking. The clutter of your mind, it is fed daily by a continuous stream of incoming text messages that you need to think about and reply to. Many of them say nothing significant, most, occasionally. And then many other things, social media. You think you're having a relationship with other human beings, but it's a very superficial relationship. It's a lot of it is conceptual. I have met people who have fallen in love with people they've never met. They met them online, and they fall in love. What do they fall in love with? A mental image that they have formed. Somebody who came to me when I was still doing counseling years ago fell in love with a man. He fell in love with a woman, and he talked to her. That was, I think, in times even before Facebook and things like that happened. He fell in love, and maybe she fell in love with him. For several months, they talked every day, and I said, you have to meet. You don't make plans for getting married before you meet her. And finally, they met, and that was the end of it. So the unconsciousness is something that in many of you still arises occasionally. You get taken over by mind streams. You again believe that every thought that arises is the truth. You do not question your thoughts. You forget about Byron Katie, who says, is that true? When a thought arises, is that true? Is that really true? So most of you are here because you are engaged in this awakening process. The awakening process is happening in you. You may not be conscious all the time, present all the time, but it's there enough for you to bring you here, and it has begun to transform your life. And then there may be a few people here in whom this has not happened, and the only reason why they're here is to please their spouse. Or they couldn't say no. Or a friend who says, you have to come to this. You really need it. I want you to understand what he's talking about. And your friend says, Maggie talked for 2 hours and he didn't say anything. Now, we are at a peculiar time on the planet that makes it even more important for us to be here at this time when there is an intensification, seemingly, of unconsciousness. Although what you hear on the news and in the news is not the whole story by any means. This event here, for example, is of greater importance, although it only involves maybe 1,000 people, is of greater importance than almost anything you will read or watch in the news tonight, because it involves humanity reaching a new level of consciousness where they no longer generate insanity and suffering for themselves and each other. But is it going to be on the news tonight? I don't think so. Unless one person goes totally crazy in here. Now, this is funny because it's absolutely true. And when you look at it like that, you can see that that also is insane. That if one person becomes crazy out of thousands, then that's the news. But 1,000 people becoming conscious and not being crazy is not the news. Despite the fact that what we hear and listen in the news is distorted and one-sided, it is true that there is a certain intensification of unconsciousness on one level on the planet. And at the same time, there is also an intensification of the arising of new consciousness. So there's an acceleration or intensification of both the gravitational pull that creates the senseless suffering and the arising of the new. So there's the... So as I said, in the mainstream media, it's mostly the gravitational pull is the news mostly. But then there's an underground movement of which we are almost underground. Not totally underground anymore since Oprah, but... so it's gone a little bit overground. She helped a lot with that. That's there. But what is happening here is still dismissed by a lot of the mainstream media. They have a certain way of reporting on it, in the rare cases when they do report on it. And that applies even to the so-called the high-level media. It would be rare to find an objective report about if the New York Times wrote about this, there would be an element of irony of creeping in and dismissing it as a fad. Mindfulness is a fad. It's a passing phase for humans who haven't made it. It's a substitute for whatever. So on one level, things are getting worse, it seems. That is true. But on another level, things are getting better. You sometimes read people saying, it's never been as bad as it is now. The world situation is so critical now. It's never been as bad as it is now. Well, people have short memories or haven't read any history books. All you need to do is go back to the first half of the 20th century if you think it's never been as bad as now. You're fortunate, your karma must be relatively good that not only that you're here, but you are not living through the first half of the 20th century. It was the height of insanity and senseless suffering, not only the two world wars, but all the other conflicts in between, and including governments killing their own people by the millions in Russia, Germany, China, Cambodia, and so on. So anybody who doubts that the human mind does not have a strong element of insanity, which is the gravitational pull of the unconsciousness, should really read some history book, just a short account, and then you read the details. You can, this is unbelievable. In the same way that even now, when you read certain things that happened today and yesterday in certain parts of the planet, see, this is totally crazy. And yet, the unconscious beings in the West, it's not as much on the surface, it's not as, the unconsciousness is not so immediately apparent in the West, Western countries. But it's connected to the extreme forms of violence that's happening on other parts of the planet. It is connected. I don't want to get into politics, though. Our task is primarily to embody the new consciousness, which I sometimes call presence. And this is why we're here, so that this presence can arise more fully in us. That's the reason why we are here. There's nothing you can do ultimately about changing the world out there, although if you feel called upon to help in certain areas, that's a wonderful thing. The most vital thing is to tackle the roots of human unconsciousness, the human unconsciousness, tackling human suffering on the level of cause. That is vital. Then you can help alleviate suffering on the level of effect, if that is what you feel you need to do. You can help humans, or you can travel to places where there's turmoil and suffering, if you feel called upon to do that, knowing that you may not survive, that's fine, and you can help there. But knowing also what matters is your state of consciousness, because that creates the world. The world is a reflection of your state of consciousness, what you experience as the world, as your reality. There's a strong correlation between your predominant state of consciousness and how you experience reality. There is a saying, which may not be a politically correct statement, but I'm not too concerned about political correctness. Political correctness, of course, by the way, is a wonderful thing, because I'll just mention this briefly. Even to talk about political correctness may not be politically correct, I don't know. Political correctness starts with, this is how, through the, when there's lack of awareness, there's also lack of balance. Because only awareness can bring in the balance between the yin and the yang, for example. So when humans suddenly become aware that if I make certain statements about certain groups of humans, that is insensitive, and when I make those statements, those humans are affected by it and they suffer. And this is a wonderful realization. It means there's empathy in you. There's an awareness of how your words impact another human being. There's an awareness that your judgments of a whole race, of a whole group of people, a nation or a tribe or whatever, impact these people, and so you are more careful with what you say. And this is how political correctness arises, what is now called political correctness. It arises from something good, the ability to empathize with another human being and to see that your judgments are just judgments. So there's some awareness there. And then if you take something to an extreme, and then awareness gets obscured again, and then that in itself, what originally was a good thing, becomes completely unbalanced, and then suddenly you say there's something dreadfully wrong with you if you call a group of people that includes women, you guys. Apparently the latest thing that's not politically correct, because they are women, they're not guys. This is just one example of many. If you can, you can read about it for hours on the internet, and you can get upset about it either one way or the other. Now, you take something to an extreme. Why do people say you guys? Because of the inadequacy of the English language, which does not have a second person plural. It does not have a you that means all of you. It only has you, which means you can mean one person or you can mean many people. So they came up spontaneously with this you guys, and many women use it to address other women and say you guys. And I think unless we eliminate that expression, which is possible, otherwise in 50 years' time it'll be in the dictionary. It will have become the second person plural, which means you, which other languages have a different word for it. In Spanish it's vosotros, in German it's ihr, So there are extremes of political correctness when it becomes insane also. And whenever awareness disappears, whatever the mind does, sooner or later becomes a form of insanity in the absence of awareness. Communism was a wonderful thing to start with. Communism was, you could see the dreadful inequality between how people, certain groups of people were exploiting all the millions of workers, and somebody saw that, we need to change that. Look, these people are—they're exploiting all these workers. We need to remove power from these capitalists, and the state will run things. It's all wonderful. So that they wanted to create a better world. It's a great idea. But what they had not thought about is their own state of consciousness, and the ego. That ego, by the way, is the unconsciousness of identifying with your mind completely. So they had looked at how do we need to change the world, but what they forgot is what about my state of consciousness? And then the same evils that they wanted to eliminate, they recreated in another way. And you find it in all the countries, in many third world countries, where every few years the government gets overthrown and a new government comes in. And of course, very often the people who want to overthrow the government, they have good intentions. They say, these people are corrupt, we need to get rid of them, look, they're exploiting the people. True, true, true. So vote me in, or whether you want me or not, I will remove this government, this corrupt government, and I will create a better government for you people. And the moment they achieve power, the latent ego in them suddenly grows. Give power to a seemingly meek person who has no worldly power and seems, oh, this person is relatively egoless. This is a person who has a job, he's told what to do, and he does it. Or she, it seems the ego is always in the politicians, they have the big egos, and look, this man has virtually no ego. And this is because the ego has not many opportunities to enhance itself. The only place where his ego functions is at home, when he relates to his wife and his children. That's where the ego can have a little bit of strengthening. But give this person real power, and the ego will suddenly, the latent ego will suddenly grow to a monstrous size. And this has even happened in spiritual communities. There was a spiritual community in Oregon last century where, some of you may know it, Osho, the spiritual teacher, had a community in Oregon. A few people were given power in that community, and they were very, very meek and mild people, especially one woman was given all power. The woman was before very, very almost subservient and seemed to have no ego whatsoever. And the moment she was given power, it only took a few weeks, a few months, and suddenly in ego inflation happened very quickly. And suddenly you have a monster there, and suddenly people started walking around with machine guns in the spiritual ashram. She said, we need to protect ourselves from these evil people outside. Ego, the ego loves its enemies. It needs its enemies in order to enhance its own fictitious sense of self. So it creates the enemies, totally unconscious. And that's how many politicians do it. When other countries are demonized, the media do it. All forms of unconsciousness, lack of awareness, when ego takes over and runs the show. And the suffering that humans are enduring, the collective suffering, most of it is not due to, at least not in the past 200-300 years, is not due to natural disasters such as earthquakes and floods and volcanic eruptions and tidal waves and so on. A larger part of it is human created, and that's an amazing fact. millions of people going through, living through hell in the 20th century alone, but the hell is created by other humans. That is the state of consciousness that has been prevalent for a very long time on the planet. I do not usually predict the future because it's, I believe you cannot really predict it because there are many factors that are involved here. I am absolutely certain of the awakening of humanity, that it will happen. And the fact that we are here is a sign, of course, that it is happening already on a certain scale, on a certain level. What I am not certain of is whether the awakening that's arising in a certain percentage of humanity now, the spiritual awakening, whether that is sufficient to prevent the gravitational pull of the old consciousness, to call it that, from creating enormous havoc, thereby producing suffering for millions of people on a collective scale, which in turn will eventually bring about an arising of the new. So the only question is here, is the new consciousness of humanity going to arise out of where we are now, or are we going to experience, before there is a large-scale awakening of humanity, because this is not yet large-scale, it's large-scale in certain small areas of the planet, does humanity, is the unconsciousness so heavy that humans need to go through a period of intense suffering before there is a collective awakening? And the intense suffering will be self-created. And that question applies to any individual also. Is this human being capable of spiritual awakening, or does he need, or he or she need to go through more suffering before it can happen? It's a simple thing that applies on all levels, both personal and collective, for the individual and the collective.
I'm Oprah Winfrey, and you've been listening to Eckhart Tolle, Essential Teachings, the podcast. You can follow these essential teachings on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you haven't yet, go to Spotify and follow this podcast. Join us next week for more enlightened teachings from Eckhart Tolle. Thank you for listening.